Thank you, and I appreciate this opportunity to talk to you about some of the work that we've done. Again, the kind of the stage has been set with regard to the healthcare system itself, the Christus facility, the BioSense project. I'm going to get into a little bit of the BioSense project itself, mostly in terms of trying to compare and contrast between what biosurveillance is and traditional case surveillance is, just so that you can kind of see the difference and why this was somewhat of a big deal. It had its beginnings, you know, it may have been 2 years ago, it may have been several years back, but, you know, the whole biosurveillance infrastructure, me as a traditional case surveillance project manager, I keep looking at the development of HL7 interfaces at healthcare systems and at laboratories, and I you know, I like HL7 as well too, so I kept thinking, would it be possible to tap into existing BioSense data streams? You know, it's, you know, like on like. My gosh, they've got a compatible infrastructure. You know, the data is there. Could we leverage it? You know, just because you built it for biosurveillance, couldn't, I mean, HL7 is HL7, and use it to actually do something else as well too. And you know, I wasn't unique in thinking that. A number of folks, as we were going through, you know, gosh, can't we tap in and repurpose some of this data and have it go to the traditional case surveillance? And gosh, if we could do something like that, wouldn't it be novel enough that maybe we could use that as a pilot project and see if we can do this same kind of thing in other areas as well, biosurveillance, particularly with BioSense, kind of creating that proof of concept pathways for others to go as well. So that's when the team kind of came along, and I'm fuzzy with dates, I'm fuzzy with a lot of things, dates especially. I'm fuzzy with names as well too, so I'm not going to go through and try to individually identify most of the members that are referenced on these broad groups or actually sitting in this room as well too. So Christus Health, CDC, not only BioSense, and the NEDS project participants at that time. Got together, SAIC with the BioSense project as well. Emily and the Constella group coming in and bringing in BioSense as well. Texas DSHS, I think the first time we talked about it, we hadn't changed our name from Texas Department of Health, but anyway, we're DSHS now, and Pete Varnell is in the back, instrumental in getting a lot of this done as well. So, just kind of in a real quick nutshell, I was tempted to throw in a real busy slide as well too, but you know, I think I'll just cut to the chase. And here's the words: really, what we're trying to do is look at a dual use of the data. Again, the infrastructure that's going in for biosurveillance, extend it out and see if we can promote case reporting as well too. Looking at the sources of data that would be coming in for a biosurveillance or BioSense infrastructure. I kind of underline the ones that are the ones that would be of particular interest for case reporting, and that would be the foundational, the demographic type information, as well as the laboratory data included. The BioSense integration engine, kind of looking at it, it's kind of really neat and compelling to think that it's taking very heterogeneous messages from multiple parts of the Christus facility, for instance, and then bringing them into a common and consistent format. The infrastructure of that is, like Lane, that he had a real nice slide earlier about the 11 hospitals that were enrolled and kind of why we went down and narrowed down to just those four, mostly because singularly because those are the ones that were providing results, laboratory results, therefore the kind of information that we could use for case reporting. We looked at the standards that were within biosurveillance 2.5. They were using an HL7 2.5. We were using integration software that could handle it. So, you know, it was nice. It was something that could be useful. They were using FinMS for messaging transport amongst the project itself. We had FinMS up and running within the Department of State Health Services as well too, within our area. So it kind of really looked like there was a lot of similarities. So we knew that we could get going. Just real quick, a primer at this point. You know, what is biosurveillance? I promised that I would talk real briefly. I'm not going to read my slide. In a nutshell, biosurveillance, you're using secondary data to go in, detect and see if there's aberrations. You put it into a common case definition, test those common case definitions to see if there's aberrations. Anytime you have a peak, a predefined peak within those algorithms, you're looking for excess that may be occurring. Therefore, is there something going on in the community? Biggest thing that I wanted to point out of this is the very last button on this is the thing that Lane kept stressing, and that is biosurveillance typically excludes patient identifiers in the form of the PHI. The data is anonymized, so very hallmark component of it. Traditional case surveillance, the thing that the NEDS-based system is wanting to consume and use, some of the hallmarks, predefined conditions, starts oftentimes with a laboratory report. The information is legally mandated by law to be reportable. So at least in Texas, it is by law. Others, it's either by statute or by some type of an agreement. I kind of buried it a little bit higher than just the bottom. It is PHI-oriented. Personally identifiable information is part of the record for reportable, case reportable data. Healthcare providers, laboratories, all of those type of medical facilities that would be starting the report, in Texas at least, they are routing it. It's supposed to go to the local health department. It could be either a county or regional health department, and then they then collect and submit notifiable reports to the state. Within the NEDS-based system, that's kind of handled where you put the data into a web-enabled application, and then it's immediately available all along the chain, both up and downstream. So we started looking and saying, well, if we did put this together, what would be the benefits, and what are we trying to do here? We really wanted to see if we could extend out the infrastructure that was being developed with BioSense. Again, the dual use, the whole idea. Boy, they're creating the HL7 messages. We like them. Let's see if we can go forward. That lands up being a major benefit because it really extends that electronic laboratory footprint that we would have for reportable conditions. I mean, it's my gosh, we can go into four facilities now without having to have an individualized message mapping for it. So we can start expanding out as BioSense expands out. Therefore, we could necessarily expand out as well too. In that capacity, you're connecting multiple layers within one data feed. So again, there's an economy of effort there. So kind of looking at how you create a message, and I'm going to get a high-level overview of things that are kind of in the weeds. Let's talk about how ELR can happen for case detection laboratory reporting capacities. You have message creation. The laboratory or the healthcare facility has to, put all of that message together according to guides, et cetera. Those guides are then used in the BioSense integrator creation of that message. They need to then come to us. This is just, again, our traditional case reporting flow. It's transported to us, in this sense, using FinMS. And then consumption, once we actually receive that data, we need to be able to do something with this message. And we have developed an ELR, an electronic laboratory reporting system, a set of routes of how we can take that data and make sense of it in terms of reportable conditions. So how do we do that? A very quick overview of how we do that. The ELR message, as we described, would be received from the laboratory. Regardless of what format it is, in this sense, it's a 2.5 HL7 message, version of the message. We transform everything we receive to an HL7 231 message content and markup. The vocabularies within the content of the message itself, we're going to validate it. And I hate to use the word validate because oftentimes whenever you whenever you find something that doesn't validate, you reject it. Well, oftentimes what we're wanting to do is standardize and look at it and see if we can transform. Oftentimes, local codes getting transformed into a standard code of some sort. Whenever I say a standard code of some sort, what could that be? What would we be doing? I mean, do we invent these things? No, we go to the HL specifications themselves. When needed and as appropriate, oftentimes we're looking at the ELR implementation guide. In this sense, it's the 231 implementation guide for reporting of laboratory results to public health. We'll also come over to FinVADS and have it kind of as a reference of record or the gold standard for things, especially like LOINC and SNOMED. We will also use program area addendums if there's certain variables that an HIV or an STD or a general communicable disease would need to have. We would transform data as needed according to that program area addendum. So here we've got the message. I will have a little diagram of all of this. It actually does kind of look good in terms of taking these words and seeing it a little bit better as well too. But after we've standardized the message, we interrogate it and see what disease it is or what disease it could be indicative of, and then we'll route that, you know, electronically route that to a file or a catcher's mitt, is the way I like to look at it. According to which system needs to be handling that potentially reportable condition. For instance, the HIV-STD results going to the HIV-STD reporting system, a core communicable disease going over to our NEDS base system. At that time, once we kind of see it's an HIV, needs to go to the HIV system, or NBS, needs to go to the NBS system, we may see some tweaks that need to be handled on that message, you know, tuning of very specifically what is that data system needing in order for it to be able to be consumed by that data system. For instance, the big one here is format. The HIV STD surveillance system can electronically consume messages, but they have to be in an ASCII format in a very prescribed format of how that would be coming across. So we've taken that program area addendum and transformed messages according to their prescribed format. Again, looking at the content of that, you know, what is it that they're expecting? Are they expecting 1 and 2 for male and female? Are they expecting M and F for male and female? Those kinds of transformations we can transform again according to their needed and necessary standards. Now's the pretty picture time. On the left, whenever we talked about message creation, the little yellow teardrops on the left are the providers. That's where the message is created at. Looking at the provider list, these are the ones that we currently have in our queue, either in production or in a test phase. The first five being in production, and that is LabCorp and our state health lab are giving data to us in an HL7231 message format. CPL, ARUP are both giving us spreadsheets that we then convert over ultimately to a 231 format as well too. And then the BioSense Christus feed, which is coming into a 2.5 format. Again, those are all standardized to a common standard of a 231 message. The last little teardrop down there that's kind of in the pending folder is the Quest Diagnostics. Their HL7 message, we're working on getting it transformed up to a 231. They're providing it in a 23Z format. Again, after it's standardized to the 231 format, we'll standardize the content, you know, further if needed, and then route according to as needed. Consumed by the NBS in the 231 format, turn to standardized ASCII text for just about the rest of the recipients. This isn't the list of TB get some too, lead get some too. So, I mean, this is kind of an abbreviated in terms of the right-hand side of who receives it. Very specifically, something I'm going to be talking about later in terms of tools is the Orion RAPSI product. For the most part, is the green line in the middle, or all the green boxes in the middle, That also is very comparable and compatible with what's going on within the BioSense project as well, too. I believe we're actually using the same tools. When we were preparing for the BioSense project, one of the first things that we did was we looked at an MOU. Again, that was a very fairly different thing for us whenever we're looking at setting up electronic data feeds. You know, we define out the variables using data standards, et cetera. Usually we don't use MOUs, yet at the same time, because this was a very different project and we were having in the intersection of anonymized data that was being repurposed for, you know, case reporting purposes, we really wanted to describe that relationship between the healthcare system and the public health agency use of that data very clear, so that there were no conflicts, not only within the healthcare system, but also with that relationship that was going on with BioSense. It very specifically, the big gorilla in the corner is HIPAA, to make sure that we weren't stepping on any toes with regard to HIPAA. And in that sense, it really clearly states the legal authority by which this data can be coming to us. We looked at the message content, you know, HL725 and what we were needing. kind of looks crazy. You got to be kind of nerdy to look at it and say, hey, this looks cool. But really the biggest thing after we looked at it was very minor differences in terms of HL7 content. I'll cut to the chase and say patient name and demographics is very important to have. And the stuff coming out of the BioSense integrator did not have public health or personal health information, so we needed to have them create a circle back to go back and get that data. Beyond that, there were very minor differences, the use of some of the HL725 specific contents, as well as just how that markup came across. All of those could be handled at the Orion layer on our side, so we could map those accordingly and appropriately. As Lane discussed, we had to also define what is reportable, what do we need to be getting from this project. We needed to recognize, I mean, the first temptation, I think, was, well, let's just look at the list of nationally notifiable diseases and, you know, load that up and that should be it. Well, there's also state reportable conditions that are not nationally reportable, so we needed to include those as well, too. And, oh, by the way, since this is taking care of data collection that needed to be occurring or would have previously been occurring at the local level, we needed to recognize and respect that there were locally reportable conditions as well, too. So we needed to extend this out to a locally reportable that might not be state or nationally. So, it, you know, the list kept kind of growing a little bit. Again, we then needed to come back. And this was, again, on the BioSense side, is to determine that list of now what are the tests that are occurring within the CRISTIS facilities that were indicative of those notifiable conditions, recognizing and knowing that all of those were micro tests. Programmatically, what did we need to do to work at and prepare for this? We needed to look at the federal and state rules and regs to make sure and ensure that we were, you know, following what we were doing and stating within that MOU. The MOU between the hospital and CDC, again, was handled on their side. Very specifically, programmatically, we were starting to create an MOU between our agency and Hank and the CRISTIS facilities. We also needed to establish the required data fields. If there were certain items that needed to come across, and how were they to come across? Yes, we had implementation guides, but we really don't have a BioSense to lab result implementation guide. So we had to kind of compare the two guides that were in place, the NEDS ELR messaging guide and the BioSense specification guide. And so it came into some interesting phone calls. Again, if it was hairy for you, Hank, I guess I should have, you know, taped some of those discussions that we had. It sounded geeky, but it was fun. Technical tasks, some of the things that we needed to do was determine the data flow. Very specifically, as they split that data stream off and they were filtering, again, for the positive lab results, they needed to circle back, re-identify the data. And then we needed to also set up certificates and the FinMS capabilities of transmitting the data from the facility, the BioSense Integrator facility, to our state NEDS program. And then we also needed to, and this was kind of the big one, was we needed to be able to have the maps to create the 2-5 message back down to a 2-3-1 so that we could actually start using it. You're not going to do the, okay, that's a 1, not the stop. Telling me how much time I have left. Big thing here, behold the benefits of standards. I think that's one of the big take-home messages that I've got. Beds, NBS and BioSense both use heavily embedded industry standards and industry tools for how we're conducting our business. The HL725 messaging message standard, very nice to have. Again, we were looking at the NEDS-based system needing the 2-3-1, but with the use of the Orion Rhapsody tool set, we can take that 2-5 and bring it in because it's a very well-documented standard. We were looking at common messaging transports, the FinMS, not only for sending on their part, but receiving on our part. I say that and I keep coming back to things like FinMS because the exchange of data security is very paramount. I mean, we needed to make sure at this point it will be containing PHI. It will need to be secured to the utmost degree. The standardized vocabulary, again, making sure that what they're saying and what I'm understanding it to mean would be consistent. Status, again, Lane described the BioSense data and the timetable for the BioSense data flowing into the NBS. The BioSense lab results reporting are being sent, mapped, and going in for state consumption. We've routed test data, and actually last week we did start putting this through our production system. Even though we've been receiving this since April, running it through the test bed and all, we needed to go through a fairly extensive user acceptance test period as well, too. The in-stream public health, local health departments, regional departments that actually use this for case detection and case reporting needed to come in and make sure that, you know, this was fitting their needs as well, too. And this was giving the expected data that they were expecting to have. And there were a couple of other projects that were on queue that were very important to have them kind of coincide with this one as well, too. So lock, stock, and barrel, we're in production now. The initial development of the evaluation process, I see John Avalera in the back. We're going to do this. It's going to happen, and I will participate, I promise. He's been trying to get me going on that because I think it's a very important part is looking at how is this affecting us, not only in terms of timeliness of the messages going between the facilities to public health, but also completeness of reporting, completeness of data items. Probably one of the biggest things and the reasons that we're really kind of challenged in how we want to do this evaluation is we really want to make sure that we describe the changes to the business flow and talking about some of the reporting efficiencies that are going on because of this. And again, that's an intangible that we're needing to somehow quantify in a way that we can say this is how it's affected the business process in and of itself. Findings this far, last slide, I promise. We emphasize the adoption of and promotion of standards-based ELR. And just like I was saying earlier, behold the benefits of standards. This really wasn't a trivial project, yet at the same time, it was a project working on from a standards base. It was easy to kind of marry up things because we were already talking standards and just marrying up the standards is all we needed to do. It really fostered the case surveillance between the public health case surveillance and the healthcare information systems. It was very successful in doing that. It did facilitate, just kind of what we call a ready exchange of data. The data store is there. We thought at the beginning, build the infrastructure, can it be used because it was so common? Yes, it does. I think Scott had said this once before, too. It was an opportunistic implementation of ELR. So, I mean, it kind of went outside the box of, here's a lab, let's connect in and get data. No, this was kind of an opportunistic. We saw some opportunities and we went forward and actually created something that was very proof of concept in terms of can it happen, can it work, can you vehicle data, and yes, it would in terms of if other NEDS compliance systems in other states, you know, it should be able to be applied elsewhere as well. And that's all of the slides that I have to present to you.
I'd like to open it up for questions and ask the other two speakers if they wouldn't mind coming up. And if the speakers, if you wouldn't mind restating the question that's asked so that we make sure to capture that in the recording. Thank you. First question.
Logistics sounds like something some of the STDs would say.
Yes.
Could you describe a little bit more thoroughly what is
Well, currently we've got 35 data sources operational, so there are 35 BioSense integrator implementations representing 550-some hospitals. So some of those are syndromic sites where they're basically forwarding on information, and some are hospital health systems like Christus. But certainly any place where we have laboratory results coming to the BioSense integrator, we would be in a position to send it on, reformat it. We are currently, we do that today with LabCorp, which is one of those 35 sites. And LabCorp is sending to 20-some different state NED systems. A little bit different, they're using the integrator for routing and transmission, but not necessarily for case detection and formatting. So this really was the first time where we were taking the Christus sends one laboratory feed to the integrator, and the integrator handles all the flow to public health and can repurpose the data accordingly.
And what is the integrator?
It's primarily a Rhapsody engine. In addition to that, it has linker functionality, which is a service that does the data anonymization and maintains the cross-reference between the BioSense IDs and the actual patient IDs for that health authority, so you can track back to the actual patient. And then it also includes the FinMS sender service. So those three main components. That first slide that I showed is absolutely the Christus setup in detail, and it shows the breakdown of all those functions in that center block. So those are the three main components of the integrator, and right now it's a Windows-based solution, uses Microsoft SQL Server as its database. So It runs on a server in the facility, and I think that's one of the other differences is that it anonymizes the data before it ever leaves Christus's infrastructure. So Christus really controls all of their data through that process. Yeah.
Ray Allard from Los Angeles. Wanted to ask about the choice of what tests are being sent out through EOR. If I am understanding correctly, you're only sending microbiology cultures to the state, not yet infectious disease serologies or so on. And perhaps that's because that was all that was being sent to BioSense?
Correct. You got it exactly. BioSense basically looks at microbiology, some serology tests are of interest, but we don't generally receive general chemistry or other sub-departments in the lab. So there's nothing technically that would permit or would keep us from doing that other than the volume of data. Generally, BioSense doesn't doesn't expect to receive.
No, I'm not asking about chemistry, but I'm asking about like measles serology or toxoplasma serology.
Yeah.
Which ordinarily we would get in a
public health. I'm going to defer to one of our analysts here.
Typically,
Lisa? Yes.
Leslie Ann Helm is from Virginia. We have a facility that's a biosense facility and it has a filter, you know, the process going on. How much, well, it sounds like there's quite a bit of work involved in getting them to be able to send this stuff. Are you folks still available to work with us in the hospital to accomplish this?
That's probably more a programmatic question than a technical question. It really, this was a proof of concept, so a lot of the capabilities are now in the integrator. But I think as far as starting an extra project, we're hoping that there will be other ELR projects at existing biosense sites in the future.
Probably talking to CDC biosense.
Yeah, that's what I was going to, you know, Leslie Ann as a NEDS coordinator with you as well, too. I have additional biosense sites in the state of Texas, and I'd be very interested in extending this over to those models as well, too.
Sure.
And again, I was looking at the biosense, you know, program staff as the recipient of that question, because I think it's one that we're going to need to be asking of that project.
Was that a yes?
Yeah, hopefully.
Jeff Johnson with San Diego. We have 6 biosense hospitals, and thank you very much for your presentations. I think this is the cutting edge, next steps for biosense. Question for Doug. What were the costs to the health department for this in terms of people costs and then actual hardware costs or infrastructure costs?
That is as easy as that question is for you to ask. It's really kind of hard to answer, and I hate to say it that way, because it was in-kind costs. I mean, we pretty much already had, we already had Orion and Rhapsody. We already had the ELR routes set up. So in essence, our cost was our time to work on this project, which is already our job description. I mean, that's what we're supposed to be doing. So it was all born in-house, in-kind, in terms of map development, was getting that darn MOU through as well too. I laugh, and the rest of it is almost like a inside joke, because it wasn't a rather simple. It may have been one of the most technically challenging components, and I'm talking even harder than getting a 2-5 message to a 2-3-1 message was getting that darn MOU through. So really, that's where the costs were born, was things that were already in kind and in house. No additional costs in terms of having to buy additional hardware or any type of filters or anything like that. It was already here.
Regarding the re-identification process, where did that occur? And there must have been some additional costs for that, because that's outside of the biosense scope.
No, actually, that was done within the integrator before the messages are transmitted out to Texas.
And those integrators would be in the hospital facility.
Right. So basically, the reason for that is that you may get several updates to patient information over the course of the hospital stay. And so at the time the result is identified as a reportable result, we go and take the most current ADT data out of the ADT part of the feed and reattach it to the lab results so that it gets you the latest and greatest information.
So does that mean that the BioSense project would be willing to provide re-identification capacity for other BioSense locations then?
Same answer we just gave.
Yeah, it's exactly the same answer. Technically, yes.
You mentioned that there's 35 integrator sites. How many of those sites actually receive laboratory data? Because I understand that quite a few don't.
It's not it's under a dozen. I don't know how many.
I think nine.
Okay. It's It's right.
If there are nine sites sending microdata right now, then those are the better candidates for trying to sell that to public health.
Absolutely.
If a site is not now sending micro, if a site is a biosense site, but it ain't yet sending microdata, then it might be more difficult.
Correct. There'd be a lot more work that would have to
correct.
Be at the integrator and at the data source to provide that data.
But some of those nine sites are multi-hospital.
Yes. Yeah.
Follow up on that, how many sites are Meditech sites so that this would work, or will it apply to other sites?
Well, actually, that it doesn't have to be a Meditech site. So as long as the integrator is receiving lab results from the hospital's laboratory system, then we're in good shape. The big criteria is it needs to be coded results so that we can map it to SNOMED, and that's the current process. So
why can't you? If it has to be mapped, you have to map local codes.
Right. Yeah. If they only send a text result.
Local codes versus text.
Right. Right. It doesn't have to be SNOMED coded. It just has to be coded.
Because it needs to be machine readable.
Well, but so we can do a 1-1 association with SNOMED. Right.
But if it were a neat, brief, unique phrase, could, or is that just wishful thinking on my part?
Right. Allegiant is not providing, is not sending laboratory currently to BioSense.
Oh,
are we? Oh, I'm sorry. Is it not, it's not coded? Or is it one of our, was it one of our candidates? Okay, I'm sorry. I stand corrected. We are sending lab there. I think the issue was that the lab results aren't coded. That was one of the difficulties. Yeah. Yes. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Is BioSense still expanding fairly aggressively to other facilities?
No.
So there's limited opportunities for this, I guess, is what I'm hearing. If it's not expanding, and you already looked at a lot of the candidates, so you're kind of looking at Quest.
Well, I think the issue is that over time, just like with Christus, as they've added more and more facilities that have the availability of the outbound interface out of Meditech, they what was available when we started the CRISTS project and what's available in the future probably are going to be different. So, but we're at this point, I don't believe we're aggressively adding new BioSense sites, but we are certainly looking at going back in and adding additional functionality to existing sites.
I'd just like to urge you to remember that a microbiology organism code can be 500 characters long.